everybody. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 26th of November 2019, a Tuesday. And if you haven't left town already, it's getting late. If you're going somewhere or if people are coming to you, if you work it out so people come to you, it's so much nicer. The commute is so much better. I am Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, downloading, sharing, telling a friend. However you get this, if you get it sent to you on a flash drive by Carrier Pigeon, I just appreciate the use of your ears. Lots of stuff going on in the world, even though none of it's particularly earth-shattering. It was kind of a slow news day, but there's always something to talk about. That's the beauty of life, is there's always, always something to talk about. I do want to talk about one thing, a couple of things, actually, of a personal nature, just because I had Rich Lowry on the program last week, as you know, and if you want to win a copy of The Case for Nationalism, signed by Rich Lowry, email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. And a lot of you have, so it's not like it's the vast majority that I'm saying this about, but it is, there's some of you. I've been getting the emails, and somebody wrote up on iTunes, what are you having Rich Lowry on for? You can't have, stop, Reverend, what would you do that? Did you listen to the interview, is what I would ask. Listen to the interview, because it doesn't sound like you listen to the interview. The interview is about the subject at hand. It is not about Donald Trump. If there have been plenty of guests on the program who are not Donald Trump fans, who some of them aren't even really particularly conservative, but what they come on the show about is interesting. And that has to be the first and foremost goal for any show. You can have the straight down the line, nonstop conservative agreeing with you show, and it can be boring as hell. Would you listen to it? Probably a couple of times, but then after a while you'd go, all right, enough of this. It's boring. And you'd move on to something else. Or you could have the super interesting, but really, liberals aren't really super interesting, but you could have the disagree with you program where it could be interesting, where you might learn something. I don't want to be a preacher, or otherwise I would have gone into the seminary. I am a conservative, but my best friend is a whack job liberal. We disagree on politics vehemently. We used to argue about it constantly. But what we do now is avoid the subject. Why? Because there's no point in discussing the subject. We went to high school together. We've known each other all of our adult lives. We've been drunk with each other more than we'll ever be drunk with anybody in our lives, no matter how long we live. And to sit there and say, I can't possibly have anything to do with this person because they voted for Hillary Clinton, well, it's kind of a waste. He lives in New Jersey now, so his vote didn't really matter. I live in Maryland now. My vote didn't really matter. So what's the point? I could lose my best friend, or I could just say this one thing we're going to ignore, and it's okay. It's all right, because there's so much more to life to talk about and so much more in life to enjoy than this stuff. So when you send me the emails of don't have this guest on or have that guest on but not the other one, there are logistical issues for there to be a guest. I appreciate the guest's suggestions, but as you can hear from the interviews, it's hard enough to get the sound quality to be audible when the guest is right there. So when that's just a problem with the studio. So getting somebody remotely is tough. Getting somebody who is going to be in DC is tougher. And then getting somebody who's willing to come to the Daily Caller offices is tougher still. So it's an ever narrowing field of potential guests, from everybody down to like a couple, you know? So there's going to be guests, there are going to be interviews, and there will be interviews with people you disagree with. Some people you absolutely hate. And whenever I know it, because when I have them on, I get the emails, what are you giving this person a voice for? What are you giving that person a voice for? I believe that your conservatism is strong enough to hold up to somebody who doesn't agree with it. that you are strong enough to move past somebody who doesn't agree with you. It's really that simple. If you don't become the left, do not become the, I am going to shut them down, I am going to shout them down, I do not want to hear contrary opinions, because in life you're going to come across contrary opinions, and the better you're able to handle that, the better off you'll be, to be perfectly honest with you. It's kind of important. It's a skill, and it takes a little bit of exercise every once in a while, even just to ignore it. I live, like I said, in Maryland. I am vastly outnumbered. I go to places all the time in liberal, I'd say liberal areas, but the whole state is a liberal area except for the Eastern Shore. And you will inevitably hear some moron liberal whining to some other moron liberal friend of theirs about, oh, can you believe X, Y, or Z? Oh, they're putting children in cages. Oh, the separation of, oh, Trump did that. Now, I could spend my whole life going up to each one of them and explaining to them exactly how stupid they are, but they're a special kind of stupid that won't ever understand it. They won't get it. There's no point to it. So rather than ruin my meal or my time out or the movie or anything like that, I choose to move on. I don't move away from them. I don't run away. I can handle that contrary opinions exist. The left can't handle that contrary opinions exist. And that is why, because on a giant college campus like UC Berkeley, when Ann Coulter goes to speak in one little room inside one building, so one part of the campus, one tiny part of the campus, in one tiny building, in one tiny room in that building, that people are outside panicking and rioting, essentially, because Ann is in there saying something you don't agree with. Don't be that. Be better than that. Now, because they're insane. They can't handle contrary opinions. Don't become the people who run to the Play-Doh and the puppies in the safe room because you can't handle the fact that somebody thinks differently than you. I get it. You didn't like Rich Lowry or you don't like Rich Lowry, and you're not going to listen to the podcast because Rich Lowry was on there. That's your choice. There was a lot of good that came out of that interview with Rich Lowry, including, I think, a further understanding, a better understanding of where Rich Lowry personally stands. And it might surprise you, but you'd have to listen with an open mind and listen to the end where we get into it to be able to understand that. So, like I said, don't be them. Be better than them. And actually, I want to start with the idea that even the left is having enough of the left. So you don't beat the left by becoming the left. A comedian, another comedian said, I'm not playing college campuses because they're so insane. Don't make the rest of the world like that. Be better. Be better. And like I said, if you want to win a signed copy of Rich Lowry's book, you don't have to read it. You can sell it on eBay. You can set it on fire. You can do everything in between. Use it to balance a table. Use it for skeet practice. I don't care. But if you want it, probably you should sell it. Of all the choices, you should sell it on eBay, if anything. You'd at least get 10 bucks for it. You email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, and there you go. You'll have a chance, even if you hate them. Give it a shot. God forbid, even if you hate somebody and disagree with their politics, there's a good possibility that you could learn something from them. There isn't a Democrat running for president of the United States that I would even consider voting for on a dare. But there isn't a Democrat running for president of the United States that I wouldn't absolutely love to have on the program. And there isn't a Democrat running for president of the United States that I would get up in their face and tell them they're a moron. I would treat them with respect, not the way that happens when someone like Kellyanne Conway goes on MSNBC or CNN, where they're complete a-holes to them. I would treat them with respect. We have policy differences, but I have no reason to believe that they're history's greatest monsters in the making. So with that in mind, I would interview. I almost had Andrew Yang on the show. I was working with his people, trying to work it out. It just didn't come together. And then after a couple of days going back and forth, it just kind of fell apart. But I would absolutely positively be open to having Andrew Yang on there. I find him very fascinating. I don't care what somebody believes as much as I care that they actually believe it. The phonies, the fakes, the frauds. It's the Holden Caulfield in me. The frauds are who annoy me. The people, the liars, are what annoy me. Bernie Sanders is a committed socialist leftist. He really, truly believes in what he says. He's just absolutely wrong on every single thing. But I don't think he's coming at it from an evil place. I think if he were lying about it just to get power, then he would be. But I think he's coming at it from an ignorant place, a willful ignorant place, because it has to be willful. He's lived long enough and he's seen it fail everywhere else. But I think he truly believes it. He's not like so many of these people who just say what they think the audience wants to hear. Bernie has been saying this crazy stuff forever. He believes it. He's in. He's committed. In for a penny, in for a pound. So in that sense, I at least have some respect for him. Elizabeth Warren, kind of all over the map. Kamala Harris, kind of all over the map. Joe Biden, now kind of all over the map. He's sort of renouncing and distancing himself from positions he once held. I don't have a lot of respect for that. He's not standing up for what he says were his deeply held beliefs his whole life. He's now saying what he thinks the voters in the Democratic primary want to hear. I don't have respect for that. For Bernie, I do. I don't respect his views, but I have respect for the fact that he is not full of it. He's not out there making it up, sticking his finger in the wind and trying to see which way it's blowing. He believes it. So in that sense, I will continue to have on anybody I can get who I think I can have an interesting conversation with, and B, I will try as this goes on to get more people with whom I disagree, and presumably that means with whom you disagree. If only to illustrate the differences, I'm happy to have a debate with people. But I don't really want to have an argument with them unless they're argumentative. The difference being, they're nice enough to come in. It's an inconvenience to come in. We are not located near central D.C. at the Daily Caller offices. We're off downtown, not where the action is, not up on Capitol Hill, not where the think tanks are, not where really the hotels are where people stay when they're in town. None of that. So to come in takes a little bit of effort. Yeah, they're getting something out of it. They're getting exposure to a large audience, but they're also doing us a favor, doing me a favor, coming in and talking to me. And I tell you, everybody I've had on the show, even the people I've disagreed with, we've had laughs. Not always on camera, although usually. We've had good laughs. We've had a good time. You don't have to agree with somebody 100% of the time, or even 10% of the time, to enjoy their company for short periods of time. For God's sakes, you're going to be sitting at the table, probably, hopefully, with a whole bunch of people on Thursday. A whole bunch of them. Most of them will be related one way or another, but some of them won't be. And hopefully, none of them will be complete jerks. But I guarantee you, you won't know their politics. You won't agree with some of their politics. Now, you can either decide that that's a priority and try and needle everybody into finding out who the liberals are and then going at them and run risk of crapping all over your Thanksgiving dinner. Or you can just say, you know what? That turkey's good. Can you pass the stuffing? Or, hey, let's watch football. The Lions suck. Let's watch them get destroyed. Whatever you feel like doing. The choice is yours. I would recommend that you go with the former, not the latter. That's just me. And that's how I conduct the show. Plus, I need guests every week. So it's part of it. But it is really, they're doing me a favor by coming in. and I think by extension, all of us a favor by engaging in interesting conversations and not being complete and total jerks or coming in uber defensive. Nobody who comes in is shocked that, oh my God, I'm sitting down with a conservative, a guy who disagrees with me totally. Now I'm scared and paranoid. No, they come in. They don't know me, or they know me, whatever, and they know where I'm coming at it, but they know they're going to be treated with respect. And when we disagree, as Rich and I did on immigration, we could have done a whole show on just that, we just say, okay, well, we disagree on this. Neither one of us are decision makers. We're not exactly going to make policy, make law. So there's no point in beating him over the head about my position or him beating me over the head with his position. We have to agree to disagree and move on. I am a firm believer in the live and let live doctrine. As long as you're not coming at me trying to force me to do something or think something or believe something, I will extend that same courtesy to you. If you are coming at me, like most liberals do, trying to force me to do something or believe in something or pay for something, then we got a problem. Then it's game on. But when we're just talking and debating about issues, so be it. You can think what you think. I will think what I think. There are issues out there that we've never covered on this show because they're not big in the news, but they are probably important to you, some of them, and they aren't important to me. And there are some issues out there that are important to me that probably aren't important to you. We could focus on those things to the exclusion of everything else, but I'm not really sure what purpose that would serve in life. So we don't. We focus on the big things. We focus on where we agree. That's the way to go. That's how life should be, at least in my opinion. Anyway, I'm off the high horse. I think that that's important to do. And like I say, we got a story coming up about a comedian who is dealing with this on the other end. Don't be like the left. My God. Don't. Because the left is full of it. Literally full of it. Which is why they should drink life change tea. And why you should drink life change tea. So you're not full of it either. Look, I drink life change tea every day. One cup every day and it keeps you regular. It's the tea that makes you go. It's a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse to clean out your inside so your body can absorb the good stuff that you eat. You're not absorbing all the nutrition from your food because your ability to absorb it is blocked. You need to take care of that. And the Life Change Tea, it's sort of, think of it as maintenance. Every day, maintenance for your insides, if you will. Your ability to digest food and your ability to absorb the nutrition in food is incredibly important. Have a healthy digestive tract. It helps everything else about your life. That's why it's so important. That's why you should go and try this for yourself. Just try it for a month. What do you got to lose? Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. You get more energy. Like I said, I drink it every day. You don't drink a ton of it. And don't overdo it. Lord knows, don't overdo it. Follow the instructions. But it's not available in stores. It's at getthetea.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. My name, D-E-R-E-K, 10% off. At checkout. 10% off. You can't beat that deal. And you need this stuff. You do. You need to get that stuff out of your body. Trust me on it. Okay, speaking of people who aren't drinking Life Change Tea, but because they're full of it, the left, The Blaze, has this story. It is Pete Davidson of Saturday Night Live fame. Remember Pete Davidson? Pete Davidson was the one who had the little dust up with now Congressman Dan Crenshaw when he was a candidate. And he said, you know, you got the eye patch that you look like a Bond villain or something like that. I forget what it was he said. But as I take a sip of my Diet Coke. The Dan Crenshaw, of course, lost his eye in the war on terror to an IED. And so people skewered Pete Davidson and SNL to their credit, ended up having Dan Crenshaw on. I think that helped Dan Crenshaw get elected, showed Dan Crenshaw to have a sense of humor, showed Pete Davidson to have a sense of humility. Pete Davidson lost his father on 9/11. He worked in the World Trade Center. He was killed there. So they got along. They went along when Pete Davidson got really depressed because his dim-witted girlfriend broke up with him, Ariana Grande, or fiance, or whatever the hell they were. I didn't follow it that closely because I'm an adult. He talked, Dan Crenshaw called him, checked in on him, made sure he was okay. So I'm not saying they're friends, but they're friendly. They don't agree politically, but they're friendly. So Pete Davidson is a guy of the left. Well, Pete Davidson is done with college campuses. The Blaze has the story. Pete Davidson, a comedian best known for his work on Saturday Night Live, said he will no longer perform stand-up comedy on college campuses because he feels the sensitive environment restricts what he can say, according to Paper, which is an online magazine. Davidson told the magazine that doing college shows is no longer worth the risk of losing money or getting backlash for saying something potentially offensive. He was asked by Tommy Dorfman what it's like doing comedy in such a hypersensitive world. Now, this is a direct quote from Pete Davidson. It is tough to read just because I think he's like 22 years old and he like throws the word like around in like and stuff. So I'm going to read it as is and your brain will be able to make sense of it, although your brain may hurt afterwards. He says, quote, it makes doing college shows really hard. I refuse to do college after this year because it's like you're just setting yourself up for trouble. Comedy is just like getting destroyed. Stand-ups about to be about like sneakers. Like, I told you there was a lot of, he's a Valley girl. What can I say? Like, hey, everyone likes sneakers. You can't talk about anything. You can't. The second you open your mouth and have an opinion, you lose money today. And I don't think that's a safe place to live in. He's right. Again, this is another shining example of Frankenstein's monster coming back to destroy the castle. There's part of me that revels in this, but I also wish that more leftists would come out and say this sort of thing. I give President Obama a lot of grief, and I give him little credit for especially the things that the left loves to give him credit. But when it comes to standing up to this sort of lunacy, the shouting down, the screaming, the protesting, the riots, the demanding of this, the safe spaces, he is right on about that, which is why he's becoming less and less popular in the Democratic Party, because he's not catering to the fringe. And the fringe demands to be catered to, or they'll burn down the whole place. Pete Davidson is saying the same thing here. Look, you guys are nuts. You're not worth talking to because you guys go off on everything, on anything, you name it, and there is some left-wing nut job ready to freak out about it because that's who they are, that's where they live, that's what they love, that's where they derive their power from. From victimhood. There's a guy named Frankie Boyle. He's a British sort of comedian or something like that. Liberal guy. The president of the United States yesterday had Conan the dog, you know, from the Al Baghdadi raid at the White House. Good dog. German Shepherd. Good looking dog up there. So there's video of there. ABC News tweeted out video of the president with the dog and the vice president with the dog and the first lady at the White House for this sort of recognition, petting with the dog there. Frankie Boyle tweeted out that story and said two children died in this raid and they're giving the dog a certificate. Two children died. How did those children die in that raid again? Oh, yeah, that's right. Their dad blew them up. Their dad blew them. Don't be that person. Don't be these people. Looking at the Washington Post, on the same subject, not of Pete Davidson and college campuses, but of that mentality of not being able to find joy in anything simply because contrary opinions, and most importantly, Donald Trump exists. That's where the left lives now. They've lost their damn minds. There is an opinion piece up there by Kathleen Parker. She's a longtime columnist for the Washington Post. And the headline, Conan the Dog is a Hero, but Trump is using the canine for attention. Imagine being that person. The dog who helped in the Baghdadi raid, the dog that chased al-Baghdadi down that tunnel, that dead end escape tunnel, which isn't much of an escape tunnel. Somebody didn't understand what the word escape meant. That dog that was injured in that raid, oh, he's just, Trump is just being an attention whore with the dog. She writes, when you're on your last leg, when your colleagues have turned tail, when the House of Representatives passes the rules under which you will almost certainly be impeached, you have to be creative. Thus, it came to pass that Donald Trump, the first president in 120 years not to have a dog, again, joyless freaks, created a national hero in the canine Conan, who cornered Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, whereupon the terrorist kingpin committed suicide. Conan is no doubt a hero. Indeed, this particular pooch is coming to the White House soon for a hero's welcome, because that's how barking mad this president has become. Not that I would deny the dog his or her due, perhaps a lifetime supply of the dog's favorite treats, but an invitation to the White House? Don't get me wrong. I love dogs. Full stop. Anyone who knows me wants to come back to my... Anyone who knows me wants to come back as my dog. I do too. But this isn't really about the dog. As always, it's about Trump. Question. What do we know about Trump? He craves attention. What will he do to get attention? Anything. And anything is in italics, so you know that it's totally for serious. When things start going south for Trump, what does he routinely do? Creates a distraction. Even roll out the red carpet for a dog? Yes. Now, it goes on from there, but you get the general idea of how insufferable these people are. The president tomorrow, I think it is scheduled to pardon the turkeys. Right? You know, the Thanksgiving, the giant obese turkeys that get to go live out their lives on some farm in Virginia. But I'm sure there will be some lefty going, oh, God, can the turkeys now go after the president? Or he's such an idiot, he doesn't understand. They're going to take a joyous tradition that is absolutely meaningless, but is a tradition nonetheless, and they're going to take a giant heaping crap on it. Why? Because they're joyless people. These are the people in your life that you should avoid. If my best friend were anything like these people, he wouldn't be my best friend. We would have never been friends in the first place. These are the people to avoid. Not people who disagree with you. The people who can't stand that you exist disagreeing with them. That's who you avoid. That's who you stay away from. That, unfortunately for Democrats, is every single one of their candidates right now. So fortunately for us, I guess, but unfortunate for them. In other news, there was I don't mean to be preachy. I can be as big a douche as anybody, but I'm just saying some of this stuff, we got to step back from it a little bit. Let it go. Just let it go. In other news, there was a big court decision yesterday, or at least it's being portrayed as a big court decision, and it's not really a big court decision. It's going to be appealed. It's absolutely irrelevant, but the left likes to get excited about these things. They need to appeal to their base. They love to appeal to their base, and they love to get clicks. So you get headlines screaming like this one from Politico. Don McGahn must testify about time as White House lawyer judge rules. Like, ooh, Don McGahn, the former White House counsel, who the president has said, no, you're not going to go up there and testify before Congress. You spoke to Robert Mueller. That's enough. Let it go. Democrats, of course, want him up there because they want, same reason they wanted Robert Mueller up there. They want the video version. They want the movie version. They want the audio version of it. They want to try and embarrass the president that way. They're trying anything. Every attempt to erode Donald Trump's support has failed miserably. So they keep on thinking, well, if we just do this, we'll do it. We'll do this, we'll do it. Well, there's such a thing as executive privilege. There is such a thing as confidential conversations that the president not only is allowed to have, must have as president of the United States. And the executive branch does not answer to the legislative branch, just like the legislative branch does not answer to the executive branch. Well, the headline is coupled with this subheadline, and this is where it gets ridiculous. The decision is expected to put pressure on other reluctant witnesses to also appear before Congress to discuss President Donald Trump's behavior. Oh, yeah, it's pressure. So all the other people are like, oh, my God, this is putting pressure on me now. Now that this decision doesn't matter. Okay, let me just read a little bit to this of the story. Don McGahn must testify to Congress about his time as the White House's top lawyer. A federal judge ruled Monday, a decision that will put pressure on other reluctant Trump administration witnesses to testify about President Trump's actions. Notice they changed behavior to actions there from the subheadline. In the ruling that could reshape the balance of power between Congress and the executive branch, U.S. District Court Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson ruled that McGahn, who spent 30 hours talking to former special counsel Robert Mueller's team, can't hide behind Trump's claim that he is absolutely immune from speaking to Congress. Now, okay, U.S. District Court, you know how many layers and appeals lay ahead before this thing ever comes to a head? This is so ridiculous. It's a bump in the road. That's all it is. It's like doing really well in your junior year first semester geometry class and thinking that somehow that means you're going to just ace geometry for the rest, or ace math of any sort. Or I should say mathematics, not arithmetic, for the rest of your life. That's not how it works. That's not how life works. That's not how anything works. There are going to be appeals upon appeals upon appeals. You go to the imagine, you know, getting excited. We won a massive victory in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal. Yeah, that's the most overturned court in the country. Okay, congratulations. Take a lollipop and sit down, because in a year, the Supreme Court has about an 87% chance or likelihood of smacking you upside the head with a dead carp. So it's not going to last. This case is in its infancy. In general, this will then be appealed. It will be appealed, and somebody else will win, and that will be appealed, and ultimately it will end up in the Supreme Court. So the idea that suddenly witnesses who are not going to testify now, like a John Bolton, who served at the pleasure of the president, and therefore if the president says don't go testify, they're not going to go testify, they're not going to go, oh well, now I've got this lower court ruling because it's a federal judge, a U.S. district court judge on top of it, is asinine. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. To make this into a gigantic story, which Politico did, is to show their desperation. They want to try and give the impression that Donald Trump is trying to hide something. Donald Trump is trying to... Presidents throughout history have refused to cooperate, who have claimed executive privilege or immunity from oversight. And it's by the very nature of the need to communicate confidentially with your staff as president of the United States. I love the Newsweek. Newsweek is worthless. Don McGahn must comply with a subpoena to testify before Congress. Here's what that means for impeachment. It means nothing. It means nothing whatsoever. It's time to get over yourselves. These reporters are interested because you see that and you go, oh, crap, I got to click on that. I got to see what's going on. And that's what they want you to do. Later on in the story, they'll kind of explain it's expected to be appealed, and it will be appealed. I guarantee you it will be appealed. This is a separation of powers issue, and separation of powers issues are always appealed. If a White House wins and any White House wins, the Congress appeals because they don't want to cede anything. And if if Congress wins, the White House appeals because they don't want to cede anything. We have this big kabuki theater go back and forth, and everybody pretends, oh my goodness, each one of these individual cases, it's so important and crucial. It's not. when it gets to these issues, the only thing that matters is what the Supreme Court says. And the Supreme Court hasn't been asked yet because we have these steps to go through to get to the point of anybody even talking to the Supreme Court. So while the liberal media will hyperventilate over this and go, finally, we're going to get some answers from these people. And I guarantee you that somewhere in a green room, Wolf Blitzer and Don Lemon and Fredo Cuomo, they're all tweaking their nipples out of excitement and joy over this ruling. This ruling is about as meaningless as their lives are, to be honest. That's how pathetic this is. Speaking of pathetic and tweaking nipples, that seems like as good a segue as you're ever going to get into a story about Bill Cosby these days. Bill Cosby's rotting away in prison because he was a serial rapist. I don't know if you saw the news on that, but yeah, Bill Cosby, serial rapist. He gave his first interview from prison the other day, and it just came out yesterday. He did the interview with something called Black Press USA, which is the voice of the black community. Whatever. The reporter, Stacey Brown, She's got the story. Bill Cosby breaks his silence, granting his first exclusive interview since beginning his sentence at the SCI Phoenix and Maximum Security Pennsylvania Penitentiary near Philadelphia. Bill Cosby's in maximum security? Jeffrey Epstein was allowed to go home every night. And Bill Cosby's sitting in jail for 3 to 10 years. Probably 10 years. And Jeffrey Epstein went home every night. Think about that for a second. Maybe this country is horribly racist. No. It says, today, in a special phone call with the National Newspaper Publishers Association's BlackPressUSA.com. Good Lord, that's a long title. Why can't you just be a reporter? Why does news have a race? Cosby said he's spending his time helping to teach and encourage a large population of African-American inmates, men he calls residents, via Man Up, a prison reform program. The 82-year-old educator, don't you love that? They just go right, the educator. Wasn't his PhD, honorary? I don't know, maybe he got a PhD. I'll look that up in a minute. The 82-year-old educator and award-winning TV producer was sentenced to serve 3 to 5 years in prison in Pennsylvania's prison system following his September 2018 conviction on charges of aggravated indecent assault, drugging a chick, and then fondling her. Because, yeah, that's what apparently you do. What's amazing to me is his wife is still, and not divorced him. There's no doubt that Bill Cosby was screwing around and giving quaaludes to chicks. Quaaludes apparently haven't been a thing in my lifetime, but quaaludes were a big thing back in the 60s and 70s in Hollywood, where it's like a precursor to the date rape drug, except they're sort of more conscious of what's going on with the date rape drug, I guess. But you just zone out. I don't know. My only understanding of what quaaludes are comes from The Wolf of Wall Street. And it looks simultaneously hilarious and horrifying. So if it had been around when I was a kid, who knows, I might have tried it. But you drug them, and then you're basically turning a woman into a grope doll, which is sick. Bill Cosby, though, still, he gets the respect. He's referred to as an educator, an award-winning TV producer, director, comedian. Wow. It's a hell of a resume for a dude who's got a string of, 50 at least women that he's God knows whated to on drugs. Unless he receives relief from the state's appellate courts, Cosby said he fully anticipates serving his entire sentence, saying he's not guilty and will never admit to something he didn't do. Displayed remorse is generally a required prerequisite to obtaining parole or a shortened sentence. During the exclusive interview, Cosby was candid, vivid, and outspoken. Andrew Wyatt, Cosby's spokesman, was also on the call. They say there were no rules, nothing was off topic. Quote, I have 8 years and 9 months left. When I come up for parole, they're not going to hear me say that I have remorse. I was there. I don't care what group of people, come along and talk about this when they weren't there. They don't know. He's got a history of this. All of these women can't be lying. All of them can't have one day woken up and said, you know what? Let's all get together over tea and figure out who to ruin. And they go, you know what? Who to ruin? Bill Cosby. Let's go with Bill Cosby. Because these stories had apparently been floating around. It was one of those Harvey Weinstein-esque worst kept secrets in Hollywood sort of thing for a very, very long time. Just nobody wanted to say it because the person who said it was probably not going to work again in Hollywood because God knows who else was involved in this. He said that his trials were a sham, unjust, and unfair. Now he gets a little bit paranoid, Bill Cosby. Maybe pudding, maybe eating all that pudding was not good for the brain. Although I will say that the Jell-O pudding pops, delicious, delicious. It's all a setup. The whole jury thing, they were imposters, Cosby stated. Prison does strange things to men. Look at the woman who blew the whistle. He said, alluding to the potential juror who overheard a seated juror proclaim before the trial that, quote, he's guilty. We can all go home now. Quote, when she went in and came out smiling, it's something attorneys will tell you is called a payoff. I don't know what they've done to my people, but my people are going to view me and say, that boy looks good. That boy is strong. I have too many heroes that I've sat with, too many heroes whom I've listened to, like John Henrik Clark, Kenneth Clark, and Dorothy Height. Those people are very strong, and they saw the rejection of their people. This is political. I can see the whole thing. So he's playing the race card, he's playing the victim card, he's playing the I'm sticking to my guns card. I don't believe for a second he didn't do it. Because when your defense is, you violated all of these women. You raped some, you fondled others, you sexually assaulted them, and your defense is they wanted it. That's not much of a defense. You know, those 50 women that were on the cover of whatever magazine that was, they wanted it. You know, they were asking for it. They wanted to. Is there ever been a woman in history who goes, you know what I really want out of life here, Bill? I want you to drug me into a coma and then fondle me while I'm in a semi-conscious state. Will you do that for me, Bill? Because nothing really gets me off than being unaware that I'm getting off. So will you do that? Why could you fondle yourself at the same time, Bill? Because that's what Bill Cosby is alleged to have done. Yeah, I think that's what Bill Cosby probably did. But no, he's the victim. He's not the perp. And he's out there playing the it's all because I'm black card. And he gives his first interview to some group you never heard of called Black Press USA that is the voice of the black community. I can only imagine where this goes from here. It's not going to go anyplace good. Bill Cosby's going to die in prison. And the only thing about Bill Cosby dying in prison that is unjust is that Bill Cosby didn't live longer in prison. Jeffrey Epstein died in prison. The biggest injustice about that isn't that his accusers didn't get to see him have his day in court and so on and so forth. It's that Jeffrey Epstein didn't live a long life in prison before he died. Bill Cosby, he's not going to live a long life in prison before he dies. If you remember seeing him at the trial and afterwards and walking in and out, he's probably not too long for this world. He's not doing super well, but well, he's going to die in prison, and he probably should. He will be missed by someone, somewhere, some point, probably. Who knew the guy was so gross? Just so damn gross. Speaking of gross, let's go up to New York for a second, shall we? The New York Post has this story. This has been all the latest rage with the left. When crime goes up and police go in to... this is why Kamala Harris is doing so poorly, by the way. I mean, that and her grating personality in the Democratic primary. And her inability to actually stand for anything. She just wants to have a lot of conversations. But every time crime goes up, police go, all right, we're going to go and address crime in this area or in the whatever. And the left absolutely throws a hissy fit. And they've been throwing a hissy fit up in New York for some time because crimes on the subways up there is going up. And police are saying, okay, well then, since crime is up, we're going to go out and patrol these subways a little bit heavier to try and stop the crime. Well, the left does not like that. They do not like police. Post has the story. Police arrested at least 58 anti-cop demonstrators who flooded the streets of Upper Manhattan to protest a fare evasion crackdown and police in the subways Friday night. Yes, in addition, because it's the idea, if you can just jump over the gate and get in the subway, then why couldn't you just reach into somebody's pocket and take their wallet? Why can't you just reach in somebody's purse and take their money? Why not? If that's your mentality, I can get away with a little, I can get away with a little more, and it grows from there. It is the acorn from which the mighty oak grows. That's why you should punish the little things as well. It matters. Not send them to prison forever, but certainly let them know that it has consequences. And if you keep going down that road, it doesn't end any. You're going to end up living next to Bill Cosby, and he might lewd you. And fondle you. Maybe that's what you want. I don't know. The crowd swelled to about 200 people soon after the protest kicked off at about 5:30 p.m. in Harlem. The demonstration was called to protest Governor Cuomo's plan to add 500 police officers to patrol the subway after several high-profile caught-on-video arrests in the subway system in recent weeks, organizers said. Now, isn't it interesting that Governor Cuomo, Democrat, brother of Chris Cuomo, Fredo, over at CNN, that the governor had to step in because crime is up in New York. Doesn't New York have a mayor? I could have sworn that New York had a mayor. I can't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure that New York has a mayor. Oh, yes, New York does, in fact, have a mayor. It's Bill de Blasio, who is on whatever side is opposite the side that police are on. That's who the mayor is on the side of. Said, as the group headed towards 125th Street near Malcolm X Boulevard, marchers chanted, F the police and fare free NYC. Now, the subway system in New York, if you're not familiar with it, is going to hell in a handbasket. It's breaking down constantly. There are delays, there are water, there's all kinds of problems because of years of neglect by de Blasio and the latest Democrat to enter the field, Michael Bloomberg. So they want to get on there for free, take even more money out of the maintenance budget for the city. Wouldn't that just work out swimmingly? The crowd, some carrying signs that read NYPD out of the subway, then marched north toward the Bronx, shutting down traffic on the 3rd Avenue Bridge by taking over the roadway. And then there's video of them storming out on the FDR, being insane. Well, you know, you should just have like snow plows at the ready. Can't we? Would that be inhumane? That would probably be inhumane. But when people are acting inhumane, you know, I think a little turnabout is the fairest of plays. Those arrested face charges of disorderly conduct and obstruction of governmental administration. The protest was billed as an FTP emergency action. The abbreviation for F the police was advertised on Twitter by a consortium of anti-cop groups calling it self-decolonize this place. Decolonize this place is the left-wing organization that is against everything that, you know, action-oriented movement of indigenous struggle, black liberation, free Palestine, workers, degentrification, and dismantling patriarchy. They just seem like they're going to be a lot of fun. These are the people who cry at Thanksgiving. going, don't you know what we've done? How can you eat this meal and sit down with, how can you celebrate this day when the history of this day is, shut up, these people. They're so insane. They really hate this country. They're anti-American, and the world will be a much better place when they stop sharing our oxygen. Quote, I was there in Brooklyn, protester Stephanie Meyer said during the march, referring to a similar protest in Brooklyn on November 1st. We have to hold the NYPD and the NTA accountable, she added. F cops and every racist, fascist person out there. These are our neighborhoods. Alicia, 22, of the Bronx, added, probably well on her way to getting a PhD in literature from Oxford. In the most high-profile arrest in the subway, then it just goes on from there. But that's the gist of it. The left is rampaging in New York, demanding that there must be justice or else there be no peace. They want to de-gentrify neighborhoods. All right, let's de-gentrify neighborhoods. Let's have police stop patrolling in these neighborhoods. Wouldn't that be good? How well do you think that would work out for the residents of those areas? Because while these unshowered mutant left-wing a-holes are running around demanding justice, the vast majority of people are not running around. The vast majority of people actually appreciate what police do, but the vast majority of people are scared to death of ever coming out and thanking a police officer for protecting them and keeping their neighborhood safe. Why? Because the great unwashed mutant asshole army will come down on them like a ton of bricks. These are violent people, and they will be violent to anyone who dares not bow to their whims. These are modern Nazis, and just because they call themselves anti-fascists does not mean that they are not fascist. In fact, this is a pretty good indication of their fascism, and that they either don't understand fascism, are hoping the audience receptive to their message doesn't understand what fascism is, or they're really big fans of irony. Whatever the case is, the sooner bad things happen to them, deserved bad things, the better off the planet will be. Speaking of people the planet is rejecting, Kamala Harris. Poor Kamala. Such promise. But this attitude of the decolonize this place people, this is what's costing Kamala Harris her shot at the presidency. Not that she was ever really going to be the nominee. There was a possibility, though. She had a chance. Unfortunately for Democrats, well, not for Democrats, unfortunately for Kamala Harris became known because she was in law enforcement. That's her resume. I was a prosecutor. I put criminals away. I protected you. And now that is not welcome in the Democratic Party any longer. She is now trying to out-wacko. I'd have some respect for Kamala Harris if she said, well, I am what I am. I did what I did, and it was for the betterment of everybody. I would have some respect for Kamala if she did that. But she doesn't do that. She can't really do that. Because she wants to win. So she ends up in a place where she's running around trying to out-whack-a-doodle, out-nut-job everybody else. And she really outdid herself the other day. Listen to her. The audio is a little bit weird. For some reason, I could not find good quality audio of it. It kind of skips every once in a while, but you know what she's saying. You can understand what she's saying. This is Kamala Harris talking about drug prices.
And I know what they're doing, and I know their business model. So my plan as a candidate for president on the issue of drug prices is as follows. We are going to set drug prices based on fair market. So essentially what we're going to do, and visit the website if you will, and if not, I can get you some documents. But essentially what we're going to do is set drug prices so that American consumers are charged a price for drugs that is the average price that's being charged around the globe.
Yes, because price controls just work swimmingly everywhere they've ever been tried, don't they? What an insane woman. What we're going to do, what we're going to do is just set price controls. We're going to do some basic math and find out whether... Yeah, the rest of the world does pay less for prescription drugs. Why? Because those governments are telling the drug manufacturers and the drug companies, which are largely in this country, at least the development of new drugs is in this country. Sadly and unfortunately, a lot of the manufacture of it is moving over to China, which could pose its own problems. But she's going to tell them, the rest of the world says, you know what, you want access to the UK markets? Well, we're not going to pay the fair market value price for that prescription drug. We don't care what it does, how effective it is, or anything like that. We simply will only pay X. And if you don't accept X, which is, you know, five times under the market value, because all of their systems are going broke, you will not be able to sell your drug in this country. We will, in fact, take your drug, steal the patent, and make it ourselves. This should be a major trade issue. Our government should be outraged over this because other countries are sort of free riding off the backs of the United States of America and then making us pay for it. On top of that, pay even more because the money has to be made up somewhere. So instead of that, Kamala Harris has the genius idea that we're just going to add up the countries, take the money and divide it and go, this is what we're going to pay. And there you go, take it or leave it. And you think, well, that's pretty stupid. That's not really going to work when it costs over $1 billion to bring a new drug to market. And the companies have to make enough money to be able to continue to develop new drugs. Unless you're content with everything there's a treatment for right now, this would be a recipe for disaster. But Kamala Harris wasn't done there because that European model where I told you, that rest of the world model where China just steals the patent, they don't care. But the rest of the world model, the supposedly free planets, they are out there and they are interested, or Kamala Harris sees them out there saying, we're going to steal your patents if you don't. And she says, that's a pretty good idea. Land of the free, home of the brave. Kamala Harris pledges to turn the United States government into one of the biggest intellectual property thieves on the face of the earth.
The other thing is this. If people don't want to cooperate with that, I'm also going to do the next thing, which is this. A lot of drugs, prescription medication, was born out of federal funding for the research and development of that drug. Your taxpayer dollars. So for any drug where they failed to play by our rules, and if that drug came about because of federal funding for what's called R&D, research and development, I will snatch their patent so that we will take over. And yes, we can do that. Yes, yes, we can do that. Yes, we can do that. It's the question is, do you have the will to do it? I have the will to do it.
It sounds amazing. Her English is great. I assume she's a native fluent German speaker, since what she's talking about there is essentially, you know, fascism. We're going to communism. We're going to take this and you do what we will tell you to do, or we'll take your patent. Now, there are some drugs that are developed in the very early stages by research grants on universities. There are no government scientists running around doing these research, except at the CDC. And the Center for Disease Control is not a drug research. They're not a pharmaceutical company. They come up with something. They note, well, we've been trying this to fight this disease or whatever, this stop the spread of Ebola. And, you know, there's some interesting findings here that might have implications elsewhere. So they throw it out into the world because they're not looking for a new treatment for ulcers or new treatment for whatever, the flu. They're not looking for, well, maybe the flu, but they're not looking for treatments for other things. They're not particularly interested in those other things. The pharmaceutical companies then pick this discarded research up and say, all right, well, let's see what we can do with this. Let's see if we can get anywhere. We have all these clinical results. Let's see what else we can find about this. And it's either a dead end or it's not a dead end. But it's not like they beat the government to the market with a new drug. But Kamala Harris really on display there. is her totalitarian instincts. When it came to guns, she's saying, well, I will give Congress 100 days, and if they don't enact the bills that I want, then I will go ahead and declare them enacted by executive order, which again is an incredibly totalitarian instinct. You do what I want, or I'm just going to do it anyway, you damn legislative body. What? All the Democrats are going freaking out. Oh, my God, Donald Trump won't comply with subpoenas. Oh, no. There's Kamala Harris pledging not to comply with the Constitution, not to comply with the legislative procedure. I'm not interested in that. Give me what I want when I'm president, or I'll do it anyway. And the Democrats are silent over that, because each Democrat has their own little wet dream list of things that they're going to go, you know what, I'm just going to impose this on my own. It's the Barack Obama philosophy of government. The problem with that is once you open that can of worms, you can't really close that can of worms. It doesn't end well for society, because you're essentially electing a monarch. To his credit, Donald Trump hasn't really done all that much by executive order. The biggest thing he's done by executive order is try to undo Obama's executive orders. And the courts and the liberals have said, you can't do that. You can't do that. That magic pen and magic phone are exclusively for Barack Obama. No one else is allowed to do that. It's our domain. It's totalitarian. It's destructive. And it will destroy the pharmaceutical industry if this woman ever gets anywhere near the Oval Office. Thank God she won't. I mean, she's a horrible failed candidate. But don't be surprised if other Democrats pick up this mantle and say, you know what, if polling shows that people think prescription drugs are too high, I will endorse this plan. It's buying votes. It's buying votes with our lives. It's buying votes with our children's lives, with our parents' lives, with our friends' lives, ruining pharmaceutical companies to win elections. There's a lot of stupidity in politics, but this has to be right up there near the top. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. I told you, no major story, just a lot of little stories, so I thought I'd get to them. Tomorrow is Wednesday. That means that you don't want to be anywhere near an airport tomorrow, and I feel sorry for anybody who is. So we'll have another show for you tomorrow. We'll have a show for you every day this week, but there'll be the interviews on Thanksgiving and the Black Friday, which is my Christmas. I'll talk more about that tomorrow. I'll see you then. Thanks for listening.